Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the regular season is upon us. Week one, Packers-Seahawks, Lambeau Field, 325 on Fox. Big late afternoon nationally televised game. A great way to get the season started, and this is as good a time as any to take a look at this Seahawks team, a perennial playoff team just like the Packers are. This is really one of the marquee matchups here of opening weekend in the NFL. And when you look at the Seahawks offense, I think what all the fans are curious about, what everybody's curious to see come Sunday afternoon, is Eddie Lacy's role in this Seattle offense. And he may have a bigger role than anticipated because Seattle's other top running back, Thomas Rawls, is dealing with an injury right now.
Yeah, and Rawls has actually still been listed as the top back on their depth chart and, you know, still taking a majority of those number one snaps, however you want to look at it, and practice throughout training camp. So the Seahawks still very dedicated to him moving forward. But again, he is dealing with an ankle injury. Pete Carroll said earlier in the week, they're going to kind of let that situation sort itself out. We'll have to see exactly what his availability will be for Sunday. Regardless if he plays or not, I would anticipate that that means Eddie Lacy is going to probably still be a pretty heavy part of this game plan. And, you know, right now with the Packers, the way that they're structured, they made a big move earlier this week in signing Dial.
Yeah.
And they've really beefed up that defensive front. So seeing Lacy, whatever reps he gets against the Packers defensive front is probably going to be the biggest matchup to watch going into this contest.
Yeah, I think so. And I just hope for Lacy's sake and for the Packers fans' sake, I hope he's at least welcomed back to Lambeau Field. Hey, this is a business. Sometimes contracts work out. Sometimes they don't. Players go elsewhere. I certainly hope that the fans don't boo Eddie Lacy just because he's coming out at Lambeau Field in another uniform. I'm not sure exactly how the fans are going to react. 80,000 people, you can't control everybody. But Eddie Lacy, he worked hard. He put in some good time here. He made some things happen in this Packers offense. I wish him the best in Seattle, just maybe not this Sunday.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that's interesting about Lacy's career, I think a lot of people forget about what he did his first two seasons, specifically his rookie year. I mean, whatever, you know, narratives were out there during his last 2 years in Green Bay, that guy really did carry the offense on his back in important stretches in 2013 and 2014.
I agree.
Despite, especially in 13, dealing with a pretty bad high ankle sprain, still ended up being an 1,100-yard rusher, still ended up helping Matt Flynn and that offense stay afloat when Aaron Rodgers was out with the collarbone injury.
Yep.
And really peaked at the end of the season despite all of those things working against him. He was a hardworking guy, beloved in that locker room. You know, his teammates loved him.
Absolutely.
And now, you know, onto a new opportunity in Seattle.
Yeah. Also with this Seattle offense, it starts with Russell Wilson at quarterback, a quarterback who's been in the playoffs, I believe, every year that he's been there with the Seahawks. He's got Doug Baldwin. He's got Jimmy Graham. Tight end, some key weapons there who have given the Packers some problems in the past. I think what everybody's wondering about on the national scene as far as the Seahawks is, have they done enough to fix the offensive line? Because that has been the weak spot on what can be a very powerful and explosive offense. For as mobile as Russell Wilson
right.
is, he's gotten sacked way too much, and that's something that Seattle is looking to fix.
Yeah, and they've already had some issues so far this year. You know, they lost their left tackle early on to a season-ending injury. You know, to me, when I look at that line, there is potential. I think you see Justin Britt and the transition he's made to center has become a really solid player there. They're going to try to help revive Luke Jokel, the former first-round pick. I think it was, second or third overall by the Jacksonville Jaguars in that 2013 draft. Trying to find a new combination to work this thing out to give Wilson more time. One of the more interesting things I saw during this training camp was people talking about how much Wilson has been kind of functioning in the pocket and really being able to improve his pocket presence, that he doesn't always have to extend plays. He doesn't always have to escape the pocket. He still is obviously in that 5'10", 5'11 range. There's going to be some natural limitations, especially with a center that's as tall as Britt is.
Yep.
But at the same time, the more command that he has and the more areas that he can throw football from, it's going to make this offense a lot more dynamic going forward.
Yeah, and you look at last year's game when the Seahawks came to Lambeau Field in December. It was a big late season game. the game completely hinged on the interceptions the Packers were able to get against Russell Wilson. The first one, I believe, was Morgan Burnett cutting in front of Jimmy Graham for a pick. It set up a score going the other way. Five interceptions in all for Russell Wilson, not all his fault, because at least two, maybe three of those were decent passes that bounced off of his receiver's shoulder pads or off their hands, and the Packers were there to grab deflections. One of those days that everything was going right for the Packers secondary in terms of picking the ball off, and it was the difference in the game.
It was. I mean, that was one of those games where the defense really picked everything up in terms of being able to execute, whether it was a missed throw from Wilson or taking advantage of a bobbled pass. That's where Dom Capers' defense is at its best, when it's being opportunistic, when it's taking advantage of those, you know, those opportunities. I'm really excited to see this defense come together now. It's going to be really interesting to see them, you know, with the hybrid nickel, the different things that they're doing defensively, how that counteracts with the Seahawks. Because if you go back the last 5 years, that's really been the biggest matchup for them. These teams have played a lot. So seeing how both sides have evolved, I think, is going to be something that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, no question. And we need to get talking about the Seahawks defense. We'll do that after the break, back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. Wes, moving on to discuss the Seattle Seahawks defense, which has really been the linchpin unit of this team and the reason that they have been a perennial playoff contender, a back-to-back Super Bowl appearance team earlier this decade. When I look at them, you have all-pro, Pro Bowl-level players at each level of the defense. And when I think of the Seahawks defense, I think of four players in particular. Michael Bennett up front, Bobby Wagner in the middle, Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor on the back end. I guess I'll let you start with whoever you want there, because those four is quite a collection, and then they still have some awfully good players around them.
The one thing that has been really impressive with John Snyder and Pete Carroll and the way they've built this defense since 2010 is really, when it boils down to it, how they developed a nucleus of playmakers, and they've really, for the most part, been able to keep that nucleus together, like the primary guys.
Yeah.
As you said, it's an incredible luxury to be able to keep Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, all in that group together. And then you look at the defensive front. You know, Michael Bennett has been a stalwart there for a number of years. And then they've also found different pieces that they brought in. Cliff Averill has been revived in this defense over the last number of years.
No doubt.
Now Sheldon Richardson rejoins, you know, a 4-3 type scheme that I think is really going to help him in the long run. So at the end of the day, I still think Richard Sherman is the one that jumps off the play sheet to everybody. He's still playing at an elite level. You know, just an absolute prototypical blueprint shutdown cornerback. And then the pieces they have around him that they've developed, there's a reason why. As you mentioned, the Packers, Seahawks have been in this playoff chase for a number of years. For the Seahawks, as good as their offense has become, the defense has been the hallmark.
Yeah. You always wonder with these units that have been put together and have been so strong, borderline dominant, I guess you would say, for a number of years. You always wonder, when is the fall off going to come? Because it's going to come at some point. I don't see it yet with this Seahawks team. Now, I'm not there every day. You know, Michael Bennett, Bobby Wagner, these guys aren't getting any younger. I mean, we saw that with the 49ers. We saw it with the Bears back in the 80s. You know, it doesn't last forever. But I still think this is going to be one of the top defenses in the NFC, if not the entire NFL, and I think it's going to have the Seahawks right in the playoff hunt once again, regardless of what happens on Sunday.
Yeah, and I kind of touched in the last segment, Mike, of watching Dom Capers and the way they've evolved that defense matchup with the Seahawks, what they do offensively. On the other side of the coin, seeing what the Packers are able to do with some of the changes they've made, Martellus Bennett, you know, Michael's brother coming into this offense at tight end, being able to have all their receivers healthy, Ty Montgomery in the background. Very curious to see how exactly, you know, the Seahawks decide to match up against that. Because as you mentioned, there's a lot of talented players strewn throughout that scheme. But seeing exactly, you know, are you going to see an Earl Thomas or a Cam Chancellor moving down in the box to follow around a Marty Bennett? Are you going to see, you know, Richard Sherman stay on his side as he's typically done in the past? That's going to be probably the biggest key in terms of who's going to end up coming out of this game is who's going to be able to win those matchups.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see how last year's game evolved. As we talked about before, it was December, a late season game, and a big one in the NFC playoff picture. And the Packers threw a haymaker right away. I believe it was the third play from scrimmage in the game. Kind of an improvised extended play. Aaron Rodgers finds Davante Adams a 60-plus yard touchdown. And you don't. It was a shock in the sense that you don't see Seattle's defense give up plays like that, no. And particularly right at the start of the game when that unit is on the field trying to set the tone, all of that kind of stuff. It was really a moment that I think the Seahawks had a hard time recovering from the rest of that game. The Packers can't necessarily count on landing one of those haymakers right away in the first quarter, but it would certainly go a long way to trying to repeat what happened last year.
No doubt, because the years in which the Packers struggled against Seattle is when they couldn't land that explosive play,
yep.
When they weren't able, you know, they kind of had to dink and dunk. Because in a lot of ways, although they're different schemes, right down to the base, you know, elements of the philosophy between Dom Capers and what they do, there is still that sort of, okay, you want to limit the explosive plays, you want to have the dink and dunk plays, and you want to maybe try to, the more plays that they run, the more opportunities you're going to have for a turnover or to stop them. So that's really is what it comes down to with Seattle. And again, seeing how their pressure packages match up with their coverage is ultimately, I think, one of the biggest deciding factors of whether or not you're going to be able to defeat them.
Yeah, and you mentioned a guy before, and it's definitely worth talking about him, and that's that safety Earl Thomas. If yeah. I recall, he did not play in last year's game. He had suffered that leg injury that knocked him out really all the way down the stretch for the Seahawks, and I think was a big factor in you know, potentially their playoff loss there to Atlanta the week before the Packers ended up losing to the Falcons. But this is a speedy, rangy center field guy. He can hit. He can go after the ball. He's a big part of the defense, and they were missing him at Lambeau Field a year ago.
Yeah, they certainly were, Mike. And I think it was Trevon Boykin that was the one that replaced him, and then he's since been released during the preseason or final cuts. So it comes to tell you, I mean, the difference, and no disrespect to Boykin, but the difference between an all-pro type caliber safety and a guy that's, you know, those fringe backups, it's such a big drop-off. And for them, you know, having Thomas back in this thing, and even, you know, go back a couple of years when I think it was Cam Chancellor was having some of the contract issues too.
Right.
When they have both of those guys on the field, I mean, that's one of the best combos in the league. I'm sure Morgan Burnett and HaHa Clinton Dix might have something to say about that, but they're certainly up there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, with that, we got to go to break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we move on, we were actually talking about the wrong guy who replaced Earl Thomas at safety last year.
You weren't. I was.
Let's get that corrected.
Yeah, that was Stephen Terrell. I, you know, so many different names, Michael. You have so much information over there. I'm trying to keep up with you. Boykin was the undrafted or whatever quarterback out of TCU.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was Stephen Terrell, who's now with the Chiefs. He was still released, though.
Okay. But moving on. This Packers-Seahawks rivalry, you and I get questions about it in our Insider Inbox column in terms of, you know, where this rivalry ranks amongst the current NFL clashes. And, you know, I said it in the column, I personally think this is the best non-divisional opponent rivalry in the NFC right now. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And the main reason I would say that is you go and ask any Packer fan in Green Bay who the biggest rival is right now for the Packers. They're going to say the Seahawks. And there's just so much history there. The other thing that's interesting about it, too, is that it's been both ways. I mean, it's been a good competitive battle.
Yeah.
It's not like the 90s with Dallas where it's like the Packers just weren't able to overcome them. The Packers have gotten their shots in this feud. It's just that, you know, whether it was, you know, the Fail Mary game or the NFC title game, I mean, it's just, there's just so many moments in there that I think Packer fans, go back to. And it's now been, you know, 5-6 years that they've been going back and forth, and they've both been highly competitive programs.
Yeah, and there were even before the Pete Carroll, Mike McCarthy head-to-head matchups, you had two playoff games between these two franchises in the 2003 wildcard game, which was the Al Harris pick six, the Matt Hasselbeck, we want the ball, we're going to score at the overtime coin toss. And then 2007, the divisional game, the Packers were coming off the bye, the whole snow globe game. Green Bay falls behind 14-0 after a couple early fumbles and then really kind of blows the Seahawks out to then advance to the NFC Championship. So a lot of really, really competitive history, as you said, between these teams. I think the current rivalry, this current era, it started with the Fail Mary game, that Monday night in Seattle in 2012. And when you look at then the next time the teams played was the opener in 2014. And it just seemed with the fans, certainly the fans on the Green Bay side, that the Fail Mary was still fresh, even though the Fail Mary was 2 years old at that point. I mean, it was one of those things that was so emotionally charged, and it's carried through then to the NFC Championship game, which was such a disappointing loss for Green Bay. Now the Packers have come back and beaten the Seahawks in the regular season each of the last 2 years. Now we'll see what happens in 2017.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny. I mean, that 2012 game, there's so many memories of that. Now, you were actually there. I was in my first year at the Green Bay Press Gazette on the beat, but I didn't travel for that game. We sent a photographer instead. Okay. But so I remember I had to stay up at my computer until 3 a.m. that night answering like fan questions in a chat. Went to sleep for, I think it was 3 or 4 hours, and I got an email or a text at 7 a.m. the next morning. They asked me to restart it because people were still talking about it. The conversation never quite calmed down. But that's what it goes back to. And again, it's different players. It's a different time. A lot of, you know, I don't even know how many guys are still left on both sides from that 2012 game. But I think you can feel in that locker room when the Seahawks come up on the schedule, it's a big deal.
Yeah. I want to throw some numbers at you here because I found this really interesting. Some stuff I researched the other day. When you look at the home field advantage of these teams, Lambeau Field, CenturyLink Field, both teams have a pretty strong home field advantage. And if you go from 2010 forward, which is when Pete Carroll took over in Seattle, and obviously Mike McCarthy's been here in Green Bay, Mike McCarthy's home record, including playoffs, 48-12-1. Pete Carroll's home record, 49-13. They're almost identical. Yeah. And when you look at the Pete Carroll, Mike McCarthy head-to-head matchups, the home team has won every single one of them. And if you go back to the early 2000s, as I was talking about before, you go back to 2003, the last 12 Packers-Seahawks games, the home team is 11-1. The only exception being 2008, the Packers beat Seattle in Seattle when neither team was really in the playoff hunt. Now, the Fail Marys included in that. The NFC title game that Packers fans and the Packers obviously believe they should have won, that's included in that. But the numbers don't lie. 11 out of the last 12, the home team has been the victor.
And that is this week's Spofford Stats and Info. It took a month to get there, Mike, but we got there. One other thing I found interesting, too, when I was putting together some numbers this week, Packers 8-1 at Lambeau Field against the Seattle Seahawks as well. So it's bode well to be at home in this rivalry.
Yeah, no question. Well, I've got to take care of some sponsor business here, Wes. Today's a perfect day to fill up with some new Campbell's Chunky Max Soup. Chunky Max is loaded with more meat than you can handle, a lot more. We're talking 40% more than a comparable chunky soup. Go on, fill up with new Campbell's Chunky Max Soup. Campbell's Chunky Soup, the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. Wes, the NFC playoff picture, I know we haven't even played a game yet. Week one hasn't even arrived yet. But this Seattle team has been in the playoffs 5 years in a row and 6 of the last 7. The Packers have been in the playoffs 8 years in a row, looking to tie the NFL record with a 9th straight playoff appearance here in 2017. But we all know, certainly the NFC track record is that a minimum almost every year of two teams that made the playoffs the previous year don't get back the following year. I think when we were talking at this time last year, if you had said the Minnesota Vikings and Carolina Panthers were not going to go to the playoffs in 2016, you'd be like, oh, no, they'll make it. They'll go to the playoffs. Well, they didn't. Yeah. So my question to you is, do you think the Packers or the Seahawks are potentially those vulnerable teams whose streaks may end, or is it someone else, you know, out of that group, Atlanta, Dallas, the Giants, the Lions, those were the rest of the NFC playoff teams a year ago?
Well, I think you still have to look at the Seahawks and Packers, assuming, again, we have 17 weeks to go here now, a lot of things can change, but you'd have to think that those two are both in the running for not only a playoff bid, but to make another Super Bowl appearance. From my perspective, I think the team that probably has the most to prove this year is probably going to be Dallas, just showing that Prescott's rookie year is going to be something that he can continue forward with. It looks like Zeke Elliott is going to end up missing six games at some point, while that's up in the legal system right now. So
right.
They're such a young team that it's going to be, I think, incumbent on them to continue that streak. And also the Lions. I mean, the Lions have made the playoffs at times over the last five, six, 7 years. But they haven't been able to get back the next year. So.
Right. That's what I was going to say with the Lions. I believe they've been in the playoffs three times in the last 6 years, yeah. But they've never gone back-to-back years.
Right.
When they've gone, and they haven't been able to win a playoff game, but when they have gone, they've lost right away and then not gotten back the following year. So that's something they're trying to change.
Yeah, and they obviously now have made a long-term commitment to Matthew Stafford. They know what the base is going to be there with their offense. So trying to build upon that, I think, is going to be tough, especially even though Minnesota, I think, still has some questions offensively, defensively, I think you're really seeing that really take form into what Mike Zimmer wants. So it's going to be another competitive NFC North. But again, going back to your original question, I think Dallas is probably the team that has the most to prove.
Yeah, and I think the way this NFC shapes up, and we'll talk about this more later, but the NFC East, you have the Cowboys, the Giants. I mean, who knows where the Eagles are headed with Carson Wentz. And then in the NFC South, the Falcons are the team on top right now, but the Buccaneers, potentially right. A rising team. Will the Carolina Panthers bounce back? There's a lot to
sort of. The Saints can play with anybody.
Absolutely, with Drew Breeze. So, but we'll be able to talk about that as these next 17 weeks go along, but we'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.